Okay, let's begin. For a number of people who've called in, I want to welcome you to the Richard Wildman Quarterly Town Hall. This is Dick Harris. I'm Executive Vice President for Coaching with Richard. Been with him a number of years. Paul, as you know, this is, if you've been on before, this is an information-sharing session. It's open to all members of the Wildman Center, and it's really specifically designed to talk about what's on your mind, your concerns, your ideas, your questions. We've received a number of great questions so far, and over the past week, country. And we want to get to as many of these as we can, and we will, but we also want to allow time for your questions as well at the end. Richard is on the line. He'll be joining us in a minute. A couple of housekeeping items, if you will. This is being recorded, as we had said earlier, and it is a live call, so please do not put your mute button on while we're talking, because we can hear you, and I would like without distracting background music. So if you'll stay with us without the mute, that'd be terrific. So at this point, I think I've covered my opening comments. Richard, I'm going to introduce Richard Wildman, who I know always has some excellent open remarks.
All right, I'll go ahead and begin today. And first and foremost, thank you all for carving out time of your schedule to be with us today. Of course, interesting times we're in. We have a big rally on Wall Street, as we most of us know, that are in the advisory side of the business. And at the same time, even in the insurance and banking side of the business, there's a lot of discussion about the Bush tax cuts, about what's going to happen with the financial cliff. So we're really in a situation now where it's now become part of the national conversation. This whole idea of what do we do next, what do we do now, how do I reach out and find somebody, how do I make a new alliance to really either manage my assets appropriately, avoid additional taxation, how do I protect my family, where do I even find a mortgage, all conversation, which is an interesting, shall we say, market coming to us. There is no question that people in the marketplace today are very concerned about what's coming up, not just politically, but let's just talk about in the core of their own financial world. So likely it's never been as good as it is in terms of the marketplace being stirred up about on the national news, all of which come to us and give you an opportunity to grow and develop out your practice with the right kind of prospects, with the right type of clients, so that you really can elevate your business performance. So with that said, Dick said, I know we've got a whole list of questions, at least from the commentary that Dick made. So, Dick, why don't we go through the questions, and we'll open the phones and have an opportunity to take any questions people have. And thanks for the caution on the muting so that we don't get background music. Dick, go ahead and begin, and I'll just sit in the hot seat here for the next little bit, and we'll go. This call is going to last until it's done, so likely they're an hour, most of them are, but if we're done in 40, fine, and if it's an hour and 20, that's fine too. I want to make sure you get your questions answered. So, Dick, why don't you begin with the questions that were emailed in to us in advance of this call?
I will, and thank you. Thank you. We have questions from America, one in from Canada as well, because we have a presence there, as many of you know. Great questions this time, Richard. Here's the first one. This is from a financial representative in Syracuse, New York. How soon after I land a new client that I want to replicate, can I ask him about providing warm introductions? Interesting question.
That sure is. And first things first, there's no, oh, my God, you must wait 46 days. But what the reality is that you want to get them thoroughly into the onboarding process. And I'm going to piggyback that comment with this. When you onboard and bring a client into your book, whatever product or service he or she is acquiring from you or process that you're taking them through, my encouragement to you is after you have onboarded, the paperwork is done, we've gone through all the trauma, then the question really is, when should you follow up? I would encourage everybody, once they're on board, if they come on board today, which is February the 27th, I would put on my calendar to call them on March the 27th and talk with them and just to have a discussion with them about, now that you're fully on board, I want to come back to you and see if there's anything else that this onboarding process has prompted, what other concerns or issues do you have? In other words, instead of just onboarding them and placing them into your normal, shall we say, communication process, that coming back to them in 30 days really shows a personalized attention to them. After you've had that interaction, you might very simply on that 30-day call simply say, you know, I'd love to have breakfast or lunch with you one day next week or in the next week and have a conversation about some other things that I need some help with, and perhaps I can help answer any additional questions you might have. So the reality is, if you get out about 45 days from the actual finished onboarding process, from our experience, that seems to be about the right timing with many, many variations. Some people want to wait 60 or 90 days. That's entirely up to you. I wouldn't do it any sooner than 30 days. I certainly wouldn't do it during the onboarding process. But I would suggest to you, by making a phone call after they're on board for 30 days, not to touch base, but just to have a conversation with them about the onboarding process. How did that go with you? Are you clear on who you're supposed to speak to on my team about various topics, thoughts, agendas, et cetera? If you're taking articulating your competitive advantage on the Weilman Center, you know you should put together an owner's manual, and there's a template for it in the resource center. And here's the people you contact. I just want to go over that with you one more time to make sure that we've communicated to you properly the way that we will interface and serve you going forward. Have that conversation and then tender the idea. Let's have breakfast or lunch and one day next week, and so we can have a conversation about other things I might be able to do for you, or at the very least, I have some questions I want to ask you about my business. And that's a great opportunity to, quote, make that introduction, if that makes sense. Nick?
Thank you. Great. Next question from a wealth manager in southern Missouri, Richard. He asks, I'm meeting a new prospect whom I know is putting me through the beauty pageant process, quote unquote. I'm up against three other firms. I only have 15 minutes in which to present myself. And his question is, how can I best be distinct in this process? And what sort of follow-up do you recommend I do?
All right, well, there's a lot of topic here. Unfortunately, the beauty pageant process does exist. Interesting phrase. The reality is that the only way you're up against three other firms is if you go in there and try to tell them what makes you different. Because from then on, they're going to compare everything they've heard from these other firms or will hear from these other firms. You have 15 minutes. I could tell you many, many stories about this. You've got 15 minutes. The most important thing is the way you present yourself is to go in as a solver and not a seller. Please don't go in and spend 5 or 10 minutes of the 15 talking about your background, your skills, articulating ability. They already have that part figured out, or you wouldn't be coming to the meeting. So the reality is, when you sit down with that individual, focus on him or focus on her and talk specifically about what are three things. Let me give you an example. I'll give you an exact example. Let's say we were sitting in a meeting and I'm there and the guy says to me, let's say I'm with ABC Financial. Well, Richard, you know, as part of ABC Financial, we're considering looking at you as a possible candidate to manage our assets. So tell me about ABC Financial. I would simply say, well, at ABC Financial, what our best clients say we do for them is, and then I would articulate my value promise, my selling proposition, a value promise. Now, what is the value promise? The outcome they're going to receive. So what my best clients say we do for them is, and I'll just give you a generic one, is that we help them grow and protect their wealth. However, before we get to all of that, what are three things you're most concerned about relevant to growing and protecting your wealth or navigating financial decisions or elevating performance or providing protection for your family? In other words, take that 15 minutes to help them recognize you're not there to sell them on ABC Financial. Rather, you're there to solve an issue that they have. And they will, it's almost shocked to go, a couple of things I've been thinking about are these, one, two, and they may not give you three. Now, I have a course on that, articulating your competitive advantage, but even if they give you two, they've really given you a paint by numbers and say, okay, here's what we will do to solve those things. Don't talk about what you can do. I can assure you the other three firms are going to talk about what they can do. What I want to know is what you will do. In other words, what we will do is we'll do a full analysis of your life insurance and your assets, or we'll do a full analysis of where your accounts are with keeping in mind the financial goals that you want to achieve. Secondly, and walk through that which it is that you will do for them, not what you can do or might do or we could possibly do. Don't use weasel words. By this time, you've got 2 minutes left. So you simply stop and say, as I said at the beginning, Mr. Wilson, the thing that our clients say makes us distinct is we help people grow and protect their wealth. What I'd like to do is meet with you after this meeting to identify our next steps that you and I would need to take so I can be a financial resource for you. Not to follow up, not to see what decision you've made, not to see how you're doing, not to yell out, what's up? Talk about next steps. People want, and particularly the affluent and wealthy, they want to know, they think in steps. Talk about the next steps to help them, whatever your value promise is, grow and protect your wealth. We do this all the time in our business. I talk to CEOs. Tell me about Wyoming Consulting Group and your coaching platform. Fine. Well, let me tell you what our clients say we do for them. What makes us distinct is we elevate business performance in today's marketplace. But before we get to all of that, let me ask you a question. What are three things you're most concerned about when it comes to elevating business performance? And it's like the dam broke. They start spouting off all these things, and then this is what we will do to help you solve that. However, let's schedule another call where we can identify next steps to help you begin move forward and solve these issues. Dick?
That was great. And if let me just add one thing to that, and that is if this individual, they said you have 15 minutes to present, Richard and I are always talking with teams. Use honor that 15 minutes. Do your presentation in 10 or 12 minutes, and at the end, finish up and say, are there any questions, anything else I haven't covered that would be helpful? The worst thing you can do is be halfway through your talk when they're looking at their watches and you're running over. So I know.
Right, and I'll tell you another thing. I had the exact same situation last night at 4:30 Eastern time, and I had a CEO for 30 minutes. When it got to the stroke of five, I said, okay, I'm going to stop here. I want to honor your time. Oh, no, keep going. I have more questions.
Yeah.
How good is that?
Yeah, that's great. Next question, Richard, comes from a frustrated agent in Vancouver, Canada. And he says, no matter how hard I try, I just can't seem to free up enough time to grow my business. It seems the list of things I have to do to manage the business gets bigger and bigger. What am I going to do?
Well, the reality is, it's like anything else in life. That which is important to you, you continue to make important. And try is not a word. Dick, you know what hangs in your office and mine. Try is dead, will do, killed it.
Right.
So the first thing you do, you can't do it this week or next week because you've already filled the time with the work you have. The reality is go out here about 3 weeks and carve out a couple of hours that you're going to focus on growth. The average advisor in the industry is spending about 3 hours a week on marketing. I'll be at the Barron's Conference this next week in Orlando. As you know, Dick, the teams we're coaching there are spending more than 18 hours a week marketing, but they all had this same problem. They're so busy running it, they don't have time to grow it. So the first thing we have you do is carve out, 2 or 3 weeks out, get on your calendar, carve out. You're going to spend 2 hours on marketing, proactively out of the office. It could be something as simple as 2 breakfasts, 2 lunches a week with clients and getting warm introductions. That is a marketing event. You've got to eat. You might as well eat with somebody that can help you grow the business. That's one. Two, the reality is that if you go on to the Wyoming Center and go to the Resource Center to practice management, download the time log, and start listing all the things you do every day, and it's broken into, 15- and 30-minute sequences. So what did you do from 8 o'clock to 8:30, 8:30 to 9? Now, why do I have you do that? At the end of the week, when you look at that, here's the question you need to ask yourself. All right, let's pick an arbitrary number. You're worth $300 an hour. Great. Well, how many of those things you've been working on this week are $20 and $30 an hour items? So the reality is it's not how much time you're spending on running the business. It's all the lost opportunity that you have because you're spending your time on $30 an hour jobs. So the way to carve out time is first to identify where you're spending time on things you shouldn't be. Secondly, to get on your calendar two or three weeks out and have a very clear, carved out time that you're going to have breakfast, lunch, or work on a attendant association meeting, whatever the case might be, second, and make that de rigueur, put it on your calendar so it's a scheduled event every week. And then thirdly, and something I've learned over the years and all of us that have a successful practice or business, is the only way a practice ever grows or a business grows is you've got to invest in services. The truth is, so many of us in our industry are so focused, we can do it all, so we do it all. The truth of the matter is that most of us love bringing in new accounts, but we do less and less of it because we're doing more and more managing the business, telling everybody we can't afford to hire somebody because we don't have the revenue. The reason we don't have the revenue is because we're not understanding where we're spending our time. So my suggestion is invest in services. Otherwise, your practice is only going to grow to the level you can, quote, handle everything. And so the reality is by investing in services, it has a profound effect. I'll give you a classic example. We have a big trade show coming up in about a week and a half in San Diego. My whole team will be there. We have a huge present. My new book is coming out. People want to order. We're getting emails. Can we order it to show? Yes, it'll be out in April. Now, I could have one of my team members there taking orders, one of my senior directors, one of my managing directors. But instead of that, because I understand lost opportunities, because we have hundreds of people that come by our booths, we have a big presence there, I've hired an intern from a temp agency who we've interviewed over the phone, and she is going to be actually taking the orders. Why? Because I can hire her for $20 an hour, or I can put one of my people on the ground for several hundred dollars an hour. What's the best use of our time? Think about it from that perspective. Dick?
Excellent. Next question. I bet this resonates with a number of folks on the line. It's a representative says, what's the best way to turn a client down that's too small? I want this to go well since it's a referral from one of my best clients. Shall I say something to my client as well? Your recommendation, sir.
First things first, if somebody gives you a client that's too small, the thing I love about this question, there is some sense there's a minimum in play here.
Right.
How many of us have taken the road that, I got a referral from a client, and this guy has got a 401k rollover worth 20 large, but I got to take him? The reality is when you have a minimum, and that's the question in my mind indicates there is some minimum there. So with that in mind, if you get a referral from one of your best clients, all you simply have to say to that client is, I'll be glad to meet with that individual and see if I am the right fit or see if we are the right fit for this individual. If not, I'll make sure he or she is taken care of appropriately. Critical, because the truth is the only reason you're getting this referral is likely this person who's the client who's referring this individual is aware that this guy or gal has some issues, or they've said, hey, I want to work with a good advisor, who do you know? Or they've complained for so long, the guy's like, I tell you what, I'll just introduce you to my advisor and then we can stop talking about this. Fair enough, which happens a lot. Now, what do you say to this client, this prospect? Well, when you talk to this prospect, if your minimum, pick a number, is $500,000 and they have $240,000, or it's $1,000,000 and they have $720,000, or whatever your minimum is, all you simply have to say is, I appreciate, meet with them, do a discovery. Okay, based on where we are today, you've got $230,000, including all your 401k money, et cetera. And I really appreciate that. However, our investment model is based upon individuals who have at least $750,000 in investable assets. So for us to put our model on top of your $240,000, we would immediately likely put you out of balance. I can't let that happen to you. So here's what I'm going to do. We have a strategic partner in the firm who specializes in accounts of your size. We worked with this individual for quite a long time. We've placed many people like you with them, and they've gotten an extraordinary elevated experience. So I'm going to introduce you personally because, after all, one of my best clients, George Wilson, introduced me to you, and I want to make sure you're taken care of. Now, the advantage of that is you're not saying, I'm not doing business with you because you're not going to pay me enough. What you're doing is let me be of service to you and usher you in to an individual whose investment platform is appropriate. Now, you might say, well, Richard, I'm in the life insurance business, and I don't want to sell these policies that are, I don't want to screw around selling somebody a $50,000 life insurance policy. You can use the same mantra. I specialize in working with individuals who need a minimum of $1 million worth of life insurance. However, I have a colleague that I've worked with for a long time that really specializes in families such as yours that only need $50,000 or $100,000 worth of life insurance, and they will partner with you to make sure that you get the advice you deserve, and I'll work alongside them to make sure that it happens appropriately, and you're done. And the important thing is the client is happy that you've actually taken care of the individual, and the prospect is thrilled that they got somebody who's running interference for them and pointing them in the right direction to make certain that they're getting the right approach and the right answers to that which it is they're trying to solve. Dick?
Thank you, Richard. Next question comes to us from Charlotte, North Carolina. It's a marketing question, Richard. I have two physician clients that I would love to leverage. This is a market that I'm interested in. I know that physicians are a tight group. How can I best ask for warm introductions from these two clients?
Well, let me just comment first things first. A couple of physicians, I think you said a two or a couple of physician clients, that's good. But the reality is you have to look at physicians as a broad market category. Here in Charlotte, North Carolina, you need to break these down. In other words, are they neurosurgeons? Are they osteopaths? Are they chiropractors? Are they OBGYNs? Are they intern? What are they? Because the reality is only 15% is, I think it's 13 was my last survey, of physicians belong to the American Medical Association. However, well over 95% belong to a specialty group in their area of expertise or specialty. So gastroenterologists know other gastroenterologists. So my point is take that physician client you've spoken about and determine what specific type of medicine they're practicing. And also, do they have their own practice or are they a hospitalist? A hospitalist is someone who is a physician who's either sold his or her practice to the hospital and works for the hospital or came through residency and became an employee of the hospital. And that's on an annual contract basis. So you may need to make that determination. Now, why? So that you can understand that if you really want to, if you will, get introduced to more physicians, I believe that's how he characterized it, Dick, or
right.
She did.
Yeah.
The best way to get a warm introduction, well, gastroenterologists know other gastroenterologists. So if the guy or gal's a gastroenterologist, put a list together of 15 gastroenterologists in Charlotte, North Carolina, maybe right across the border there in South Carolina, bumps right up against you, and meet with these individuals and ask for a warm introduction. Use the script that Dick helped me. I think it's video number 10, Accelerate Your Growth. Done too many courses. Sometimes I forget the but it's
I think it
referrals
is
and warm introductions. I believe that I gave you the right number, 10. All right. Now, here's the important thing. If they're a hospitalist and they're working in a hospital, the reality is they know everybody else in that hospital who are also are hospitalists, meaning they work at the hospital. Same thing. Make a list of individuals that work in that hospital. If they're in ER and they're in the front end of ER or the back end, which is internist, then target the ER department because they're going to know everybody. If they're a floor physician, meaning they're working on one of the recovery floors, they may know that person, but not well enough to give you a warm introduction. So A, research the market. B, segment these physician clients, I think was how you characterized it, Dick, into what type of medicine are they practicing. Thirdly, target specific groups there. If the guy or gal has their own practice and they're part of a medical group, let's target everybody in that medical group, the other 3 or 4, 10, 15 doctors that are in that medical group, so you can get an immediate warm introduction. That's one. Use video number 10 to help you. The other thing I would suggest here, one of our coaches is a retired surgeon, and she's gone through certification. She's been with us now nearly a year, Dr. Vicki Rackner. Her and I, at the end of January, did a webinar for advisors, and it's entitled Cracking the Physician's Code. Now, keep in mind, she's been a general surgeon for 30 years. She retired, and you know she's been calling me, Richard, I really want to help advisors figure this out, et cetera, et cetera. So she's joined our organization. That said, that webinar is in the library on the Wyoming Center. If you just go to the library, go down to webinars, click on it, it's right there. You can hit it, the full slideshow, the audio, her and I interacting, and she absolutely step-by-step-by-step tells you exactly how to break down and work in the physician's market effectively. It's available to you in the Wildman Center in the library. Dick?
Great. And I just want to confirm, it is learning segments 10 in the Accelerating Growth. If you do want to read or take a look at the referrals and warm introductions, that's a great chapter. Long Island, New York. A representative says, the husband of one of my best clients is older, and I fear will pass away very soon from an illness. They've been clients of mine for a long time, and although we get along fine and are friendly, I wouldn't describe myself as a friend to them. What sort of message can I send to say? And they say, should I say something about I'm thinking of you, or what do you think is an appropriate contact to make, Richard, in a situation like this?
Well, you know, the difficulty is that friend-raising precedes fundraising, so even though he doesn't, or I think it said, this individual is not describing themselves as a friend,
right.
They need to really position themselves from a kindness friendship perspective. So there's really a couple of different, I mean, there's many things you could do. You could simply, I wouldn't make a phone call, how's it going? What you might want to do is say, listen, I'm going to be in, I think you said Long Island, is it Long Island, Dick? Did
yes.
I hear that correctly?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to be in Islip next Thursday, and I want to come by and see you and George. Just say hello, and I have a little gift for you. And it could be anything, but if you know what their, shall we say, personal interests are, if they're into opera, if they're into ballet, you could take a CD on ballet, or you could take a DVD on the artist, or Second Position, which is a fantastic ballet DVD. You could take some. I mean, you got an older client who maybe not be, shall we say, all that mobile, out of the house a lot. This would be great to be able to take them something that they could view together, enjoy together, have an interesting time together. If you're into the arts, you could take the DVD, The Artist, as an example. Now, if you say, well, Richard, yeah, but I'm not really sure I want to go by their house, fine. At least send a personal note and simply say something. I've been thinking about you. I hope all is well. And we'll certainly be having an opportunity to have a conversation in the near future. I'd love to come visit you the next time in Islip, or I'd like to schedule a call with you in the next 2 weeks just to have a conversation about how you're doing and about your accounts. That's it. You don't have to get into detail. I personally like the personal visit. As some of you know, because I've done these drive-bys on you, and I'm in a city sometime, and I got an extra couple hours, I'll just pick out an office that's a client of ours and just drive by and walk in. And, of course, the managers are always somewhat floored, but I just want to see how you're doing. You know, how can I help you? I've got an extra hour and a half here. Can we have a quick conversation? Is anybody that has a question? And that means more to anybody than a, hey, how you doing phone call. That's one. So a drive-by and a stop-by is really effective. It's a simple phone call. If you don't want to do that, or you're not in the area, or you're uncomfortable in that area, at least send a personal note that I've been thinking of you, I want to have an opportunity to make sure you're doing well. I'd love to have a telephone conversation with you in the next couple of weeks just to bring you up to date on many things happening here and to get an update on your status as well. That's it. Then you set the agenda going forward. Just the fact that you reach out to them is going to have a profound impact. They've been clients for a long time, likely take your call. You know, you're getting, you know, these people are satisfied with you. They may not be delighted because they're not friends. But the reality is your fear that they may pass away from an illness, I think is how he characterized it, Dick. The only way to get over the fear is to reach out to these people personally.
Commitment, integrity, and compassion. These are just some of the
values on
which our company is
built. I'm going to ask if one of you just put your phone on hold. Can you take it off, please?
They're why we are the company you keep.
Unbelievable.
All right. Let me see if I can do something from my end, Dick.
I don't think we can do anything, Richard, at this point.
I think we can. I want to try something right now.
Thank you for calling New York Life.
Have a nice. How's that?
Did
I did a master mute from this end. Now I'm going to unmute and ask everybody if they can still hear us but not hear that music. Hold on one moment, Dick. Can everybody now hear me without that music when I put it on mute? Hello?
Hi, can you hear me?
I can hear you fine.
I think that I, when you put it on mute, Richard, I cannot, you will not be able to hear me. I think it's just you will have the call, but that's fine.
Yeah, I can't talk, Terry. What's up? No, I got to go. Bye. Dick, can you hear me?
I can, but when you put it on mute, you won't be able to hear me because I'll be on mute. So you'll have to carry the call, but try it.
All right. Okay, can you hear me now?
I'm here.
Dick,
can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you fine.
Okay. Are others on the call?
Let's continue with the questions.
Okay. Okay, and then we can edit that out if we have to. Next question is, this is from Phoenix, Arizona, Richard. I have a number of clients that are widows. Now, I know this doesn't fit into your definition of a typical market. Does it make any sense to put some sort of event together for this group, even though they don't necessarily network and communicate with each other? Your thoughts, sir?
Exactly. Well, I would say this, first and foremost, widows do tend to network and communicate. They have all types of organizations, churches, temples, synagogues, widow support groups. So likely it could be a market. But the reality is, what I would suggest you do is to put on an event for these type of individuals, such as a lunch and learn, where they all gather together, send out invitations, and maybe we're going to do something. It's all fun, no finance, as an illustration, but you could have, we're coming into the spring season. Perfect. Why don't we do something for them about flower arranging or organizing your garden in a new way this year? Because they love to come together and have that support and networking opportunity. Now, the important thing is if you're going to do that, what you want to do is invite or have these widows invite another widow. Now, you don't want to send them an invitation. If you know anybody else whose husband's died, you know, you have to be sensitive here. But what I would encourage you to do is to send them an invitation and say, feel welcome to invite another individual like yourself who is in the same cycle of life that you are. It's a nice way to say it. They will bring their, shall we say, people with whom they network and communicate, because widows happen to know other widows. The widows happen to be connected into the marketplace in a lot of different ways with each other. And the great thing about widows, they always bring, if you will, when they come, they bring their whole shoebox. And so what I would do is do like a lunch and learn. I would do a fashion show. I'd do a spring flower show. Just to have them an opportunity to come together. Maybe you have someone to come and speak about a life topic, something funny and humorous. Do it someplace where they can feel comfortable, some collegiality. They love the outing of it all. It really feels good to them. And by giving them the opportunity to invite someone they know who is in the same life cycle as they are, that brings people together, and you basically build a reverse network. These people will network and communicate with each other, and they'll talk about you favorably even when you're not there. Dick?
Great. Next question is from Kansas City. It's a little similar to one we had earlier, but it's different enough that I want to ask it again. It's a referral, and basically this individual says, I have a meeting coming up next week with an excellent prospect, owner of a large retail business in Kansas City, found me through a referral. His question to you, Richard, is he's got 30 minutes, and what he wants to do is give him as much information as he can in that 30 minutes. What's your thought on an agenda? How should he structure that 30 minutes?
In other words, let's back the truck up and download in 30 minutes.
Right.
Yeah. No, the bottom line is it's basically the same format we talked about before. The reality is really build out an agenda of questions. So as an illustration. And by the way, if you go to the Resource Center, go to the branding tools and download Trilogy Questions. That's a very useful tool. But what I would do is start off with a question. What are three things you would like to you know, what are three things you're concerned about in growing, protecting your wealth, or what are three things you're concerned about in terms of achieving your financial goals, whatever that set question is, after you follow the illustration I gave you earlier. But with 30 minutes, you'll have some time perhaps to ask some additional questions, and I'd really focus on that. As an example, what are three things you wish were different with your current advisor? Very effective question to help them move forward, because that gives you a demonstration time to talk about. And believe you me, if people give you six answers in 30 minutes with your feedback and follow-up on them, not to give them the solution in every detail, but just the fact that you ask what are three things that you're concerned about in terms of growing, protecting your wealth or protecting your family, and then come back with what three things do you wish were different with your current advisor or agent. By the time you get through those two questions, 30 minutes is pretty much burned up. And instead of getting into what you talk about, make sure you get into what they want to talk about. That's the most important thing. Dick?
Great answer. Great answer. It's so true. So true. Next question. This individual from Texas works with a team of five financial advisors, and he says, we have three associates who support the advisors. My sense is that the associates are feeling disconnected from the work of the team and not really contributing as I would like them to. How can I develop a greater sense of team spirit and involving them in the future?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of topic here. I mean, the obvious thing is they don't have a centrality of vision. I mean, I suppose if we talk to this individual offline, if I ask him what's the vision for the team, he or she would have an answer, but probably everybody else would have a different answer.
Right.
So I would encourage you to making your vision a reality course on the Wileman Center absolutely is a game changer, because it gets you all focused on your personal vision as well as your corporate vision, let's put it that way. That's the first thing. Second thing I would do is have an opportunity to really discuss with each other roles and responsibilities, because the truth of the matter is that marketing and practice management is a team sport. So it's really important that everybody is on the same page with the vision, and then we have a clear and cogent discussion about roles and responsibilities so that we are communicating effectively. And most importantly, when roles are clear, people tend to work on purpose. When they're not clear, they tend to work on pressure, which obviously builds a disconnect. So it's really important that you focus on this whole idea of getting your vision right, speak about purpose as opposed to pressure. And then the third piece of the puzzle is I would schedule a retreat, even if it's a half a day or a long lunch somewhere. Dick, I mean, how many of these have we done as a team? Well, you go to lunch for 3 or 4 hours and just have a conversation about the practice and the importance of every person in that practice and what their support means to each other, and just have an open discussion about it. And then, of course, one of the key things to keep everybody's connected, I think the word you used was feeling disconnected, Dick, if I remember right.
Yes.
And if they're feeling disconnected, part of that is because most of us tend to run our business on post-it notes and verbal commands. And so what happens is there's not a sense of collegiality or camaraderie. I encourage you, like the teams we coach, is to put together a 5-minute stand-up meeting every morning. It's a stand-up, not sit in the conference room and blast back, a Starbucks, but a 5-minute stand-up meeting with all your support staff and yourself, if you're there, to really have a conversation about what are the priorities today, where is this particular advisor today, who's coming into the office today, what can I do to support you today? Oh, you're working on account balances and statements, so we need to make sure that you don't get interrupted today, Marge, as an example. So by having that sense of vision, by having a retreat to talk about it, by having a sense of purpose and in terms of the roles they play, and then the tactical stand-up meetings every morning for 5 minutes. What it does is it really smooths out the communication, but most importantly, it connects people to each other, and the reality is there's not a sense they're not contributing or they're disconnected because they feel like they're part of something larger than themselves.
Dick? That's great. I would just add one thing to that, and that is that we've seen this so many times in working with teams, Richard, that if individuals on the team don't have a sense of the big picture, don't have the sense of the direction of the strategies, they feel they're not sure how, you know, what their role is. Where, like you said, where how do they fit in? How can I help? And if you can have that structured conversation and paint the big picture and show them where they fit, it's a team sport. The more on your team that can be actively playing, the faster you're going to grow that practice. So that's a great question from this Wildman Center member, Richard.
Excellent, yeah. Okay.
Last official one, and then we'll see if anybody on the line has a question. The last one comes in from Minnesota. Every time I hold a client appreciation event and ask clients to invite a friend, I get a bunch of attendees showing up who in no way will ever be clients with me. This is very frustrating, as I want to host a prestigious event, but I cannot control the invitees who come. Tips on what I can do, Richard.
Well, this is really fundamental. First off, I don't want to ever invite a friend because we get invitations here all the time. You know, invite a friend. I don't know who that is. I have a lot of them. So, you know what? When I'm confused and unsure, I just soon just not invite somebody. So the reality is, if they're going to host an event of any kind, lots of things. Take videos number 8 and 9, course number 8 and 9 of Accelerate Your Growth in the Wildman Center behind any classroom door, 8 and 9, first. Secondly, use the pre-present and post checklist, which is under networking in the Resource Center, pre-present and post checklist. And then most importantly, you can control the invitees by using what's called the invite up script. Important note, invite up script, and you'll see that on the Wildman Center. Now, how does that work? Well, instead of saying invite a friend, when you send out the invitation at this client appreciation event, and if you want them to invite someone, personalize the invitations. If this individual is a member of Oak Hill Country Club, send an invitation. Invite another member of Oak Hill Country Club. We'd love to have them attend. Because if it's a high-end club, it's far more likely you're going to get a good prospect. Or if the individual's in the automotive business, invite another auto dealer or general sales manager like yourself, or another executive out of the auto industry. Not somebody out of the auto industry. You may get the guy in the that's, you know, not the prospect you want. So in other words, customize your presentations in terms of invitation and invite up. Tell them who you want them to invite. I mean, I get lots of invitations. The best one I got from the school here in Hawaii, when they sent me an invitation and said, invite some other authors to attend that you know live here in Honolulu. Well, I got four of them within seven houses. So three of the four went. So I was like, oh, authors, okay, well, I'll call Spencer and I'll call Mark. And, you know, we all went because it was clear, which is a lot better than saying invite a friend. And you do the exact same thing. Make it crystal clear. Use the invite up script. Tell us who to bring. Give us direction. If he's an executive at a company, tell him to invite another executive in a privately or publicly held company like himself or herself. That way we go, okay, let me think, who would that be? That helps. And that really brings people forward in terms of their ability to target for you the people you want them to target.
So important, so important.
Critical, absolutely critical.
Yep. Well, great. Richard, thank you. That's that gets through the great questions that were sent in prior to. Do we have any questions? Anybody on the line have a question they'd like to direct to Richard at this point?
I'm going to try to unmute here in case it... mute. Anyone on the line have a question? And Dick, are you there?
I'm here.
Anyone else have a question? Let me try again. Anyone have a question? Dick?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you fine.
Yeah, I'm good. Nope, don't seem to be any. I think we can close it down. I want to, you know, thank folks for joining us. This is a meeting, especially the ones that you sent in these great questions. They really drove a lot of information coming across the line. Just a reminder, as Richard said, this town hall meeting will be posted on the Wildman Center website. Give us a few days to get it up there. And if you haven't visited it lately, by the way, you should. A lot of new resources and changes have been made on that site that will be of value to your practice. Our next town hall meeting will be in the May-June time frame. We'll be giving you a notification of that in plenty of time, and we'll let you know the date. So, again, thank you all for joining us. Richard, thank you for your wisdom, and we will talk later.
All right, thank you very much. Bye for now. Have a great spring. Market like crazy, because what you do this spring is going to determine what kind of a summer you're going to have in elevating your business performance in today's marketplace. Thanks, and bye for now.
Take care.